listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome to The Pampered Pooch on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Christine Latham.
And I'm your co-host, Vicki Nixon.
Today we are talking about what's really in pet food. It's going to be a serious topic, but we'll try to make it as fun as possible. But we want to make sure that your pet is truly pampered, and it can't be a pampered pooch if you're feeding it poorly.
Correct.
We will be back after a word from our sponsors.
We'll be right back. Right after these messages. Stay tuned.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Having a rough day? Longing for the dog days of summer? Think your fun furry friend lives a dog's life? Well, find out everything you're begging to know as Pet Life Radio presents It's a Doggy Dog World with pet expert and award-winning author Liz Palaika. Every dog has his day, and you'll find out how to make your dog's day fun and rewarding every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pampered Pooch. Our Pampered Pooch of the week is Moo Cow McDowell, and his nickname is Cow for short. His dad and owner is Ian McDowell, thus the name. Cow is a Newfoundland Great Pyrenees mix. He's 160 pounds of fun. And Cow just turned 4 in March. Besides Cow, some of his other nicknames are Bubba and Sweet Pea. And his arrival story with Ian is basically Cow was part of an accidental breeding at the borders. His dad is a prize-winning Great Pyrenees, and his mother is a beautiful Newfoundland that was in heat when she was boarded, except nobody realized it until a few weeks later. Ian came over to take pictures of the puppies every week and instantly fell in love with Cow. Cow loves going to doggy daycare in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He loves to go to a meetup group called the Troy All Dogs Play Group, which has been pretty terrific for both Cow and for Ian. Cow loves to go swimming in lakes, and he likes to play with his dad in the snow. His favorite toy is a little black and bear and skunk stuffed animal that Ian got for him. And his favorite food is pretty much anything with peanut butter, occasionally a burger off of the grill. And Cow is a cheese fiend. He loves cheese. His favorite activity is going out in public. He loves all of the attention that's showered upon him. And with a dog like that, I'm sure he gets a lot of attention. Yes. A big dog, yes. They see him coming through and everybody wants to pet him, I'm sure. His best trick, he's very good at doing, a paw or shake. And he gets lots of pampering. He goes to the groomer once a month. Ian brushes him daily, gives him lots of hugs. I'm sure lots of other good ways that they pamper him, especially if he's getting lots of cheese, right?
Yeah.
One funny story that Ian wanted to share is that when He was boarding at the doggy daycare one night. Ian was out walking two dogs out in the front, and Cal and two of his greyhound friends were in the office, and they managed to get into the kitchen area and proceeded to woof down his pizza dinner that he had not touched yet. When Ian called back the pizza place and reordered another, the guy asked if Cal had ate the pizza. He guessed that it had happened before. So, you know, Cal sounds like a great dog. He's very cute. Check out our blog or our MySpace. Just check us out for the Pampered Pooch. You can see a picture of him. And also, Ian McDowell is a dog photographer. You can check out his website at www.fetchitphoto.com. You know, Vicky, we're going to spend today talking about what's in commercial pet foods, what you go to the store, you can buy online, etc. Basically, just any kind of food that you're not making at home.
It's a big question for a lot of people, and it's been a lot of controversy since there's been pet food recalls, and people are concerned what's going on with the pet food, where does it really come from? So I think this is a good issue to address today.
Absolutely, and with our show topic of, you know, pampering your pooch, that's really the basic place to pamper your pooch.
Correct.
Well, you know, one of the things that I just wanted to mention is a lot of the commercial advertising. The manufacturers are really wanting you to believe their food has, like, the best ingredients. You know, like whole chickens, it's the best cuts of beef, grains, all that kind of nutrition. But an article by API, Animal Protection Institute, is where we're getting our information from, and they will give you really great information. You can find their website at www.api4animals.org, and they've given us permission today to use this article, and we just want to, you know, thank the Animal Protection Institute for this source of material. So, again, like the manufacturing, you know, they're and the advertising, they want you to think that no matter what, the best ingredients are in the food that you're buying. It's a $15 billion per year pet food industry. Of course, they're going to want you to think the best.
Yes.
The report we're going to talk about explores the differences between what consumers think they are buying and what they're actually getting. What most consumers don't know is that pet food industry is an extension of the human and agricultural industries. Basically, pet food provides a convenient way for a slaughterhouse and other things that are considered unfit for human consumption and other similar waste products to be turned into a profit through pet food. That waste can include intestines, udders, heads, hooves, and possibly disease and cancerous animal parts. That's not what I want to feed my dog.
No, definitely not. You know, Christine, I believe that everything begins with nutrition, for ourselves most importantly, and for our pets. If there is something that is not human-grade ingredients that I would not eat myself, why would I feed it to my pets?
Yeah, absolutely.
With all the byproducts and everything else that goes in there.
You know, speaking of the byproducts, the Pet Food Institute, it's the trade association of pet food manufacturers. It has acknowledged that the use of byproducts in pet food, you know, is basically an additional income for the processors and farmers. I mean, if they're going to admit that, there's no getting around that.
Right.
Absolutely. One of the basic things we want to start talking about is to look at a label and be able to read the label and know exactly what you're getting with the food that you're buying. The first indication is the name of the food is basically the first thought of what's going to be inside, what the food content is. Some terms can be like all or 100%, cannot be used if the product contains more than one ingredient. There's a lot of times they're using the 95% rule, unless you're excluding the water, then that's going to be supposedly 95% of whatever ingredient. That's pretty uncommon nowadays too. Basically, what you're looking at more now is whenever the word dinner is used, it's usually about 25% of an ingredient, and that usually excludes the water. If you're going to probably put it all together, it's going to be about 10% of the dry weight. And I'm saying that because when you think about it and you're looking at it and you're just going to say, oh, I'm feeding my dog chicken.
Right.
Well, depending on the word that's used with that chicken, you might be, you know, actually feeding them 10% chicken.
Right. When you think, when you're thinking of a whole chicken.
Right.
Or if you made it yourself, would be a whole chicken.
Absolutely. Now, whenever you see the word like recipe, platter, entree, formula, those are going to be combinations of ingredients. It could be as little as 3% of the actual product weight.
So it could be 3% protein.
Right.
3% chicken out of 100% is not a lot.
Right. So when you think you're feeding them just chicken or, you know, maybe a few other things, you really need to look at the wording. A lot of times, like the word flavor, that is, again, that doesn't mean there actually is beef. It's just like something that tastes like beef. So you got to watch that also. The ingredient list. That's really an important thing. The ingredients must be listed in descending order of weight. You also have to think about that. Is sometimes, like, if it's a, when they have, like, a chicken breast, and it's heavier than a lot of powder that could have been, like, a meal ground up into powder, really, like, the content, the weight of powder is going to be a lot less than that piece of chicken.
Correct.
So it's a little deceiving when you go by weight as well. So that's just something to think about. You might want to look on the label. They'll have a guaranteed analysis. It's a very general guide to the composition of the food. It's hard to specify exactly what that's going to mean for your dog, but it's a general guide only.
Christine, there's also pet food standards and regulations. There's different ways to do analysis. One is a standard chemical analysis, and that's used to make sure the food meets the profiles for complete and balanced food. They also do chemical analysis, but this does not address the digestibility, how good the food tastes, the biological availability, or the nutrients in pet food. Therefore, it's unreliable for deciding whether a food will provide an animal with sufficient nutrients. And pet food, it kind of exists in a bit of a regulatory vacuum. There are laws on the books, but enforcement is a total different story. As far as the pet food is regulated.
Yeah, and I think the recalls that we all know about
Yes. Are
pretty attestant to that.
Yeah, definitely.
One thing people need to know a little bit about is how pet food is made. Because if you're going to make a wise decision on what kind of food you want to give your dog, you need to understand a little bit about how it's made. Because knowing that will help you determine what you really want to pick for your food. Like dry food. Dry food is mostly made with a machine called an extruder. They put a bunch of materials in and, you know, mix it all up. It goes through these, like, screws, basically, of an extruder. And depending on how the product's supposed to be made into, you know, like the size or shape or whatever, it runs through those screws and nozzles, kind of like a cake decorating, you know, mm-hmm. when you have, like, different...
Tops on there to make different, you know.
Yeah, so, like, different kinds of, and if a manufacturer is making all kinds of different foods, and they're going to use the same equipment, so you might think you're going to have, you know, one, like, this is what you're buying.
Organic, baked food, let's say.
Right, but if they're making at the same location, like, this really, you know, bad food, it's going to be made most, like, I mean, organic could be a little bit different because
right.
with organic terminology, they have to be, like, they have to follow a little right. bit more specific rules. But we'll just say something that's, it's called natural or premium or whatever. You know, it's made with the same equipment. I'm sorry, but no manufacturing facility is going to have that equipment completely cleaned out before they switch to
right.
a different brand. So it's something that people need to think about. And although, like, the dog food is going through those machines and they're going to get cooked, the cooking kills bacteria in the ingredients themselves, but the final product can pick up more bacteria during, like, the drying, the coating, and the packaging. Some experts warn that getting dry food wet can actually allow the bacteria on the surface to multiply and make pets sick. They recommend do not mix dry food with water, milk, canned food, or other liquids.
Christine,
I never knew that until now.
I mean how many people do I know that wet their dog food with water, that add canned food to their dry dog food? I mean, the fact that it could really increase the bacteria is frightening.
Absolutely. You know, this article goes, which you can go online again and find, it goes a little bit more into how wet food is made. It's actually a little bit better than how dry food is made, so that's good. We're not going to go real far into that right now. We're going to also talk a little bit about comparing, like, the food types. Okay, when you're actually comparing the food types, that means you want to compare your dry food to your wet food. You might look at a bag of, dry food and say, oh, okay, well, it says, you know, this, like, 10% protein, and the canned food says 5%. Email us or check out our blog, and you email us at pamperedpooch@petliferadio.com. We can give you a calculation that's going to tell you with that wet and dry food. You can't just take, it's not apples to apples.
Right.
So we can give you a calculation, or you can go online to this article, and that'll show you how you can compare apples to apples. So it could actually be that the 5% canned food has a better protein source than that 10% dry food.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned. Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
Hey, what do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's fine.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, now we're basically at the most important part, in my opinion, is the actual ingredients in the food. Well, a lot of people might not know, when I found this out, I was completely grossed out, is that a lot of times the animal protein in pet food is cattle, swine, chickens, lambs, other animals, when they're slaughtered, their lean muscle tissue is trimmed away from the carcass for human consumption, along with a few other organs that people like to eat. But about 50% of every food animal does not get used in human food. And whatever remains, like the carcass, heads, feet, bone, blood, intestines, lungs, spleens, livers, ligaments, all that gross stuff. I mean, even unborn babies.
I know. It's so upsetting.
All of that other stuff, not generally consumed by humans, is what's used in pet food. I want you to know that doesn't mean that every pet food out there uses this. Please don't think that. But this is just so that you know that a lot of standard brands out there could, you know, using this. So it's just that if people know what the mass market is producing, then you can find something that's better. Yeah, but so all that's in there. I mean, and whatever the pet, it's or say like the cow or whatever ate, I mean, animal feed, fertilizer, all kinds of stuff like that is put in there as well. There's byproducts, which we talked a little bit about. Nutritional quality of byproducts, meals, digest, etc., can vary from batch to batch. Even some of the better brand of pet foods, like maybe something that says they're super premium, natural, etc., they, you know what? They could use some of the byproducts as well. Can. Doesn't mean that all of them are. Check your label and make sure you don't see any of that wording. Some of the byproducts, the meats can be leftover scraps. Like for poultry, can be bones. So what you think is a chicken byproduct is, you know, skeletons basically, which is really gross. The small amount left on the bones, I mean, that's not enough to constitute, again, you think you're feeding them chicken, it could be 3% chicken.
Right, the rest bones or backs or...
Exactly. And meat meals, poultry meals, all those good things that are called meals are common ingredients in pet foods. And the term meal means that these materials are not used fresh, but have been rendered. So keep that in mind. And what's rendering? Rendering is basically a process for industrial use to render livestock carcasses and to extract oil from the fat, blubber, etc. by melting it. In other words, it's like raw materials are being dumped into a large vat and boiled for several hours. Rendering separates fat, removes water, and supposedly kills bacteria. However, this high temperature can alter or destroy any kind of natural enzymes and proteins found in those raw ingredients.
Exactly. Christine, let's talk about vegetable protein. The amount of grain and vegetable products used in pet food has really risen. Plant products now replace a large portion of what used to be the meat in the earliest commercial pet foods. Most dry dog foods contain a large amount of cereal grain or starchy vegetables that give it texture. These are high carbohydrate plant products and they provide a cheap source of energy for the pet.
Quote unquote, right?
The rest of it's just calories. Gluten meals are also high protein extracts from which most of the carbohydrate has been removed. They use these to boost protein percentages without expensive animal source ingredients. Corn gluten meal is another one. It's the most commonly used. Wheat gluten is also used. It creates those shapes like cuts, bites, chunks, shreds, flakes, and slices. And it can be a thickener for gravy in the wet food. In most cases, food containing vegetable proteins, they're among the lowest and poorer quality of the foods.
Now, Vicki, do you remember when we used to buy, like, you know, dog food, dry dog food, we could just get over the counter? Do you remember when you would open the bag and you would smell this weird odor?
Yes.
Yep. You know, that's actually, it's a rendered animal fat that causes that smell. Or sometimes vegetable fats and oils deemed inedible for humans. They use those fats and they spray it directly onto the extruded kibbles and pellets and make an otherwise bland or distasteful product palatable. You know, makes your dog want to eat it.
Right.
The fat also acts as a binding agent, which makes the manufacturers add other flavors, such as animal digest, and which is made from, like, processed byproducts. So they add those other flavors onto that to make it better and your dog want to eat it. Because probably without all that, your dog
would not eat it.
Exactly. So if you never knew what that smell was before, that's the smell. Gross.
Yeah, it is.
Another area that we want to talk about is what happened to the nutrients?
Yeah, if they're doing all this and they say it's nutritious, where are the nutrients?
Well, cooking and other processing of the meat and the byproducts used in pet food can greatly diminish their nutritional value. Although the cooking increases the digestibility of certain grains and starchy vegetables, but it can also diminish, you know, some of the nutrients. To make pet food more nutritious, pet food manufacturers must fortify it with vitamins and minerals. Proteins are especially vulnerable to heat and can become damaged or denatured when cooked. That's why some people are now switching to that raw diet.
Right.
Dry food ingredients are cooked twice first during the rendering and again in the extruder. The problems are much more common than with canned or homemade foods. Altered proteins can contribute to food intolerances, food allergies, and inflammatory bowel disease. Something to think about.
Definitely.
Another thing they're doing is they're adding in processed additives into the pet food. Many chemicals are added to commercial pet foods to improve the taste, stability, etc. We talked about that a little bit earlier. These additives provide no nutritional value. It's basically to help prevent water and fat from separating. They put in antioxidants to prevent the fat from turning rancid, and artificial colors and flavors to make the product more attractive. So when you think you see these additives on your ingredient list, it might not seem like quite a big deal, except for when you stop and think about what they're trying to do with that additives. And if they have to put anything in my dog's food to keep the water and the fat from separating, that's probably a little strange, and maybe I don't want to eat it. And this is probably telling us a lot about what people food we eat too.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a different topic. Not for our show, right? Some of the preservatives that are added to the ingredients are raw materials by the suppliers, and others may be added by the manufacturer. So that's something to keep in mind. Your list might say the additives that are in your dog food, but if you have the chicken, it's not going to tell you what all the additives was in that chicken, all the hormones and everything else. So that's something to keep in mind. Because manufacturers need to ensure that dry dog foods have a very long shelf life, typically 12 months, they add in these different additives to make sure that the food remains edible through shipping and storage. I mean, all this different additives is not good. There's potentially cancer-causing agents at relatively low levels, but the use of these chemicals in pet foods has not been thoroughly studied or studied for long-term buildup of these agents. So ultimately, it can be harmful and we don't know it yet.
Right.
Now, Vicki, one thing I want to tell our listeners about is some of the potential contaminants in pet food. So given the types of things manufacturers put in pet food, it's not really surprising that bad things are going to happen sometimes.
Right.
Our pet food recalls would tell us that.
Right.
Ingredients used in pet food are often highly contaminated with a wide variety of toxic substances. And some of them we want to tell you about are bacteria, slaughtered animals, others that have died because of disease, injury, or natural causes, are sources of meat, byproducts, rendered meals, etc. All of that can be suspect to Salmonella, E. coli. That bacteria, obviously, is not good. And while cooking the protein may kill the bacteria, it does not eliminate the endotoxins that some bacteria produce during their growth. So that's something to keep in mind. These toxins can still survive processing. They can cause sickness and disease. Pet food manufacturers do not test their products for bacterial endotoxins because sick or dead animals can be processed as pet foods. The drugs that were used to treat or euthanize them may still be present in the end product as well. One of the other things besides bacteria is mycotoxins, which is basically from mold or fungi. Pet food ingredients that are most likely to be contaminated with mycotoxins are grains such as wheat and corn and fish meal. We also have a chemical residue. Pesticides and fertilizers may leave residue on plants and products. Grains that are condemned for human consumption by the USDA due to residue may legally be used without limitation in pet food. They really need to up the standards.
I know.
But again, if you're talking to people that don't believe that a pet is an, companion or a family member, they're thinking that they're just, something that you own.
Right.
It's hard to change the mind of some. GMOs, genetically modified plant products, are also of concern. This is a few years old data, but in 2006, 89% of the planted area of soybeans, 83% of cotton, and 61% of corn in the U.S. were genetically modified varieties. Again,
we're not getting the true source of grain and vegetables that we need.
Right. There's some other things that could be in your pet food. Again, take a look online. Check that out. And one thing to remember that when things do go wrong with pet food and there are recalls, some of them are widely publicized, but quite a few are not. Something to keep in mind.
Christine, there's a lot of different nutrition-related diseases that come along with this, and we can talk about that in a minute. I think it's really important that we talk to our vets about maybe some of the food. You know, you may be getting a prescription diet from your vet. I have plenty of clients who do get prescription diets, and some of the ingredients I question, and they've questioned too. So although we always encourage you to consult your vet, what I would do is ask your vet about some of the ingredients. On a prescription diet, if you see cornmeal, taurine, a preservative ethoxyquin, ask your vet what that means. Ask them to go through it with you so that you can make a better educated decision. That's what we're doing here today, right, Christine?
Absolutely.
Trying to help people make a better educated decision.
Yeah, you know, while you said that, again, like, I kind of think of vets like doctors. There's a lot of good doctors out there, and there, you know, there's a lot of malpractice suits.
Yes.
So just take that into mind. I know when I first got my dogs, and people would ask me, like, oh, what do you feed your dogs? I'm like, oh, I got them on really good stuff. You know, this is what the vet recommended.
Yes.
Or this is prescription, and, you know, I'm paying some good money for what I'm feeding them, you know, and yes. I'm thinking I'm doing so good. But really, when I learned a lot more looking at this, and I don't mean this negatively to any what anyone else is doing. I'm just explaining how I felt.
Right.
You know, and when I really learned more about it and saw that, no, just because the vet recommended it or just because it was prescription does not mean it was good.
Right.
And one of our mutual friends pointed out to me and said, you know, they still make that at a commercial manufacturer with where they're making food that costs a lot less and it's made yes. at the same place with the same equipment. And quite a good point, because when there was pet food recalls, at the time my food wasn't on the list, but food that was associated with it was.
Right.
So it's like, oh, good thing. So something to keep in mind.
It is. And I've also had several vets question what I feed. And if you're going to tell me what I feed, human grade ingredients, organic freeze dried herbs, vitamins, and a protein, is not as good as a prescription diet that's made to sit on a shelf for 12 months, I'm going to beg to differ with you.
Right.
So just like with us in our own health care and our own nutrition and health, we need to be the voice for our pampered pooches.
Absolutely. Because we don't want them to have any kind of nutrition, you know, related diseases.
Which, you know, the idea that one pet food can provide all the nutrition to our pets that they'll ever need for the rest of their entire life could be a myth. There's diets of dogs and cats that today are far from what they used to be, the meat-based diets that where our animals originally came from. There's a lot of unpleasant results with grain-based, processed, year-in, year-out diets, which would be urinary tract disease, kidney disease, dental disease, obesity, chronic digestive problems, hyperthyroidism, and heart disease. So there are many nutritional problems that come along with some of the way that pet food is processed and some of the ways that shortcuts are made. And I think it's important that we give our animals a complete diet. And again, our health starts with our nutrition. So it's really important to check everything out and look at the bottom line.
I think so. And, you know, along the way, they've realized that a lot of the certain ingredients aren't really good to use. But who knows how long it'll be that in the meantime, research will show that there are other ingredients that are still being used that aren't good for our dogs. You know, a lot of dogs have reactions to additives. Others can be a problem, you know, a result of contamination like we talked about before. Mine just have allergies that are in a lot of the commercial pet foods. The bottom line is that diets composed primarily of low-quality cereals and rendered meats are not as nutritious or as safe as you would expect for your dog.
Right. And we're not talking about the most expensive dog food. We're not talking about that or the most expensive cat food. We're talking about check the ingredients. There's plenty of cost-effective meals, including homemade meals, that your pets can benefit from.
Okay, another thing we talked about a little bit earlier is if a manufacturer is manufacturing different types of dog food, etc., at the same place with the same equipment. But one of the things is kind of like a little pet food industry secret is what they call co-packing. Co-packing is when one company makes the food but puts someone else's label on it. Kind of a little tricky, actually. And I don't want to use any names out there of any kind of companies, but one that you might think is a low-end dog food.
Like, let's say ABC low-end dog food.
Yeah. Really, like, it's made by the same manufacturer, and now it's being labeled as...
XYZ premium dog food.
Yeah, so something to consider. The big question kind of raised by this arrangement is whether or not there's any real difference between the expensive premium brands and the lowest generics. The recalled products all contain the suspect ingredients, wheat gluten, some of the recent recalls anyway, but they all also contain byproducts of some kind, including specified byproducts such as liver or giblets. Again, we're talking about mass industry here, not every pet food, etc. This is just a FYI so that you know what to, you're an educated consumer. Whatever the difference is between the cheap and the high-end food, one thing is clear though. The purchase price of pet food does not always determine whether a pet food is good or bad or even safe. However, the very cheapest foods can be counted on to have the very cheapest ingredients. Please keep that in mind. What they're kind of doing now, we talked a little bit also on, was the marketing. Like a marketing magic of all the pet food companies out there. What they're doing now is they're doing like niche claims. Pretty much whatever you need, there's a specialty food that's designed just for your dog. You know, whether it's because they have a tender stomach, arthritis, whatever it is, there's going to be a food out there that says that it's the best food for you. But in the reality, there are really only two basic standards of which all pet foods are measured, and that's adult and growth. That's just something to keep in mind. Everything else is pretty much marketing. Another marketing thing is where they're calling natural and organic. The definition of natural adopted by AAFCO is very broad and allows for artificially processed ingredients that most of us would consider very unnatural included. The term organic, on the other hand, has a very strict legal definition under the USDA National Organic Program. However, some companies are a little adept at evading the intent of both of these rules. You know, like maybe they're going to put it in their company name, such as nature or natural or organic. That doesn't mean the actual food is deemed organic by the USDA. Some of the other marketing is ingredient quality claims. A lot of the pet foods claim that they are human-grade ingredients. This is a completely meaningless term, according to this article, which is why the pet food companies get away with using it. The same applies to USDA inspected or similar phrases. Meat is the first ingredient claim. That's just something out there that is just something to think about. I mentioned a little bit earlier, if you've got the raw chicken and then you've got a stack of powder, you know, the powder is going to be a little bit lighter. So just something to think about. Special ingredients claims. The amounts of these items actually present in the food are small sometimes. The items themselves may be scraps and rejects from processors of humans' food, so that's something to think about. Pet food marketing advertising has basically just become an extremely sophisticated over the last few years. It's very important to know what all the hype is about and to make an informed decision about what you feed your pets.
Christine, there are some things that we can do as pet owners, responsible pet owners, and looking for a good dog food. One thing I think it's important to mention is always buy fresh food. Check the best if used by date on the bag if you're buying commercial dog food. Visually inspect the food. It shouldn't be dusty or moldy. Smell it. It shouldn't smell rancid or yucky. Store the dry food in its original bag in a cool, dry place. Keep the bag in an airtight container. If your dog has an adverse response that could possibly be related to the food, withdraw the food immediately. Contact the manufacturer and report the event. And pay attention if your dog is reluctant or slow to eat his food. It may be rancid or oxidized if you're using a commercial food. Also, we will have a form at the Pampered Pooch on our...
Email us.
You can email us at pamperedpooch@petliferadio.com. It's how to grade your dog's food. You start with 100 points. Every byproduct listing, you take away 10. If corn is listed in the top 5 ingredients, you subtract however many, and you go from 100, and then there's a grading scale, A through F, just like a paper. It's really informative and very good, and we both have used this and rely on it for the nutrition and food we give to our pets.
Yeah, actually, I passed that around to a company I used to work at. And along with the copy that I had at the time, it had on there like some very popular brands, and it already had them graded.
Yes.
And one of my coworkers, what he fed his dog was rated an F. And he ended up picking a still very affordable commercial dog food. Again, it is still commercial, so some of these instances that we've explained today is still, you know, applicable. But at least it went from an F to an A+, and it was very, very affordable. So,
good point, Christine.
You know, at least that he's still some better nutritional value for the dog. And I think what everybody's going to ask us is, what do we use?
Of course.
Right? Yes. I mean, I think that's what everybody's probably going to be thinking when they're listening to this program. And Vicki and I do want to tell you that we use Dr. Harvey's Canine Miracle Food. It is a freeze-dried food that has
organic premix.
Yeah.
You add hot water to it and your protein source, whether it's lamb, beef, turkey, eggs, etc., in your oil. And you've got a complete meal. It's all human-grade ingredients, organic, freeze-dried.
Yeah, and I think that's the part I personally like the best is you're not adding in all those preservatives to keep it, you know, it's freeze-dried. So
yes.
You're not going to have it at a manufacturer that's got a lot of other different foods in it that aren't as good quality. It is a food that we have to spend a little bit of time to make. We both do batches. I think Vicki makes it for like a week at a time or more.
Yes.
I make mine like, I probably spend between 10 and 20 minutes, depending on what I'm making, twice a week for mine, and that's with four dogs. So, and I don't freeze mine, but you do.
Yes, I do freeze mine, and so it lasts longer. For more information and to find out about how it, what's ingredients and all that, you can go to www.simon, S-I-M-O-N, and the word A-N-D, Lulus, L-O-U-S, L-O-U-S .com, or email us, and I'll be happy to give you some information.
And absolutely, that's what we recommend the most. But either way, just be informed. Check out what you're feeding your dog. And if it's not the best, even if you go with commercial dog food, there could be something better. And just a reminder, don't switch your dog's food unless it is like Dr. Harvey's is a little bit different. But if you're switching from one commercial food to the next, don't do that quickly. Make sure you mix that in. I think they say at least for
a week,
right?
Yes, a little bit of the old, a little bit of the new.
And so we just want to thank again the API for animals.org. We really appreciate the Animal Protection Institute letting us use this material. It's a very important subject that we wanted to let you know about. And that's all the time we have for today.
Thanks, and we look forward to seeing you in our next episode.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.